Resonance Rewind.
With Robin Pierce, Jessica Burtis, Eloise Sheehan, Jenny Bill.
And every so often, some delightful guests from the cosmos. Ooh.
This science fiction misadventure must be seen to be disbelieved. The nasty robot who spent his time wrecking the spaceship must have written the script. The first episode ended with one of the crew hanging upside down in space or whatever. And why is it that spacecrafts concocted for television are always as big inside as the arrogant ballroom, while our real astronauts have to orbit in interiors that are the size of a lying broom closet? Our final word on the subject is that Lost in Space may find itself lost in the ratings. Harsh words 55 years ago from Clay Garron of the Chicago Tribune. Hopefully the Resonant Rewind team will actually take a different angle on the whole system. So we actually go lost in space with the reluctant stowaway, and currently we have four of the team actually together, plus a newbie. Well, actually three plus a newbie. Let's go to the newbie first. Caitlin Sinclair, welcome to the Resonance Rewind production.
Hello, thank you for having me.
Well, great stuff from there. Obviously safe in North Carolina. She was first in today because she was so guilty at having missed a lecture that was online and delivered. Don't worry, it'll all be there, etc. It's another lecture, another time. It's Jessica Burtis. How are you, Jessica?
Hello, I'm alive. Which I think is good.
And that is the big sort of line. You are alive, and we're sorted on that. And also alive, but not in Lincoln this time, is graduate of Film and Television Studies at the University of Lincoln, Eloise Sheehan. How are you, Eloise?
Hello, I'm good. Thank you, Alex.
Marvellous. And proving that she's not got lost in space, Jenny Bill has literally just joined us, just in time to actually check her hairstyle from Norway and back in the production as well. How are you, Jenny?
All right, thank you.
Marvelous. Yeah, that's all right. Oh, it's like always a shock. It's like the stomach scene from Alien when Jenny actually arrives there. I think, whoa, where are we going to go here? It's almost as though there's a dramatic effect. Okay, let's move straight into Jessica. North Carolina, Lost in Space, The Reluctant Stowaway. What did you make of it?
I really liked it. I actually want to keep watching this series. my dad told me that he remembers watching it back at, on a black and white television. So I really enjoyed getting to see it how he would have. It was a great show, a very great first episode.
So I take it that critical review that we launched with from the Chicago Tribune, you'd say four on that. It just wasn't there at all, really. They missed the point entirely.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it certainly did seem to split critics down the line 50-50. Isaac Asimov said he felt that it insulted the viewer's intelligence, and I can kind of understand that. But having said that, as you know, Jessica, there is clearly a bias here because we have featured Angela Cartwright on the program before, so clearly, you know, the bonus points from there. Let's turn to our newbie today, Caitlin Sinclair. Caitlin, you mentioned you'd seen it, I think, on Sunday. Not that that means anything in terms of time, etc. What did you make of it?
I really enjoyed it. I think had I not watched earlier on Doctor Who, I probably wouldn't have enjoyed it as much, but because of that I sort of knew the conventions and sort of how it would look, and I really thoroughly enjoyed it actually. It was brilliant.
Wow, brilliant. My word, this is extraordinary stuff from that point of view, striking well in this sort of basis. Okay, let's move on to Eloise. Your thoughts on The Reluctant Stowaway?
I got to agree, I enjoyed it as well. It was quite more in depth and narrative than some of the previous older science fiction programmes we've watched, and quite experimental with the camera movements and that, such as when the camera went up the elevator at the beginning, I thought was quite fantastic. So yeah, I really enjoyed it.
And arguably, as far as Owen Allen was concerned, probably one of his rare occasions where he generally developed a notion that there would actually be a representative section of the planet Earth being represented in terms of what we saw on screen. Although I must admit, I wasn't sure whether the astronauts had necessarily had their full basic training. Jenny, Lost in Space, did it float your boat or Jupiter 2?
Actually, when I was young and I saw Lost in Space, I really disliked it because I didn't like Dr. Smith and I didn't like the way the Robinsons always allowed themselves to be fooled by him. Watching this, I thoroughly enjoyed it because I think it's about an hour and a quarter. And so they have this great opportunity to flush out the opening and explain the story, and I thought the build-up was fantastic, and I loved the sets, and of course I loved the theme music. I thought this was a really great episode. I really enjoyed it.
I think if I was pushed, I'd tend to go for the play or the production that was made by Alan without Jonathan Harris's character in it, which was an expanded sort of compilation side of things that I'm sure Robin will be able to tell us about. Robin, it looks as though certainly from that point of view, the team are very much in favour of the series that first introduced you to the world of science fiction as a young Welsh boy.
That is absolutely right. I remember this being shown first in the mid-60s, so I would have been either 5 or 6. And I have really fond memories of watching this. This was my entry into sci-fi. As I mentioned a few weeks ago when we were doing Thunderbirds, Gerry Anderson and Irwin Allen were my two go-to sci-fi introductions, if you like, in the 1960s. And I think that this pilot, well, it's not actually the pilot. The pilot was called, as you mentioned, No Place to Hide, which was the basis of the first 5 episodes of the series. And altogether, it makes a really good adventure sci-fi serial. And it's so, so well made, with really high production values. But this, to me, I mean, you know, you've got the year 1997, which is 32 years in the future from when the program was filmed. Earth is hopelessly overcolonized. You have this scheme to send families into space to colonize around Alpha Centauri. The Robinsons are the first. An unfriendly foreign power has a dastardly spy on board who can kill with a single karate chop. Now, where was that later on when the series developed? Who sabotages their environmental robot, sends them off in a trajectory that they weren't expected to go to, through a meteor storm. They probably hit light speed. When they all come out of their suspended animation, they have no idea where they are. They can't read any legible sort of like star maps or anything like that. They are completely, totally lost. And, you know, we just take it from there. I mean, it's an admirable setup for what would become, certainly the first season. Later series, they lost it a bit, but, you know, the first series, absolutely.
Launched in America on Wednesday, September the 15th, 1965, of course, 4 years before Neil Armstrong successfully took his first steps on the moon. And just again, echoing the sort of notion that was put together from the point of view of the New York Journal, Jack O'Brien there, Lost in Space should be. Its premier plot, Out of Perils of Pauline by Swiss Family Robinson, was about a family sent to colonize a planet, way out there someplace by Gemini. An enemy agent sabotages the spacecraft, but not enough to stop the show. The authors, directors, and producer accomplished that little thing. And what's a nice girl like June Lockhart doing in a space bomb like this? If we add to that the notion that S. Bar David is a pseudonym because Shimon Winselberg was so embarrassed by this, he didn't want anything to be associated with it at all, I don't know, maybe we are actually viewing it through different eyes and so on, because I've gone through a love-hate relationship with this series from thinking that is just appalling. The science is weak. It's pathetically put together. You've got a situation whereby the tether that keeps Guy Robinson or John Robinson, or Guy Williams, in space, that would never happen in zero gravity. We have experiences of experiencing gravity where they say, oh, look at your hair. And you think, well, have they not had any basic training here? And of course, we have Jonathan Harris just hamming it up to the nth degree. However, it was nice to see that they at least acknowledged the virus, which was, of course, an invisible virus in any case, made up by the Dastardly Smith. However, let's just calm down a little bit. Jessica, what about the characterizations? Did you think that they were well put together? Who was your favorite member of the Robinson family? Was it, you know, Judy? Was it Maureen? Was it, of course, Penny? Was it Will?
I liked the whole family. I feel like we didn't get to know them a ton. I think Will was the character we got to really see like the most of. He's very like trusting and very innocent. But I think my favorite character out of the whole show is actually the Doctor. I think he's a hilarious villain. I liked everything he did in the whole show. I loved his introduction, like just rolling out under the table secretly.
And of course, Jonathan Harris was so claustrophobic.
It was great.
Jonathan Harris was so claustrophobic, he basically refused to actually be locked into that whole system. So the first scene we actually see of him before it cuts to his face is of a double. I'm citing, of course, the Ultimate Guide to the Lost in Space, Volume 1, of course, by Marc Couchon, the authorized biography of a classic science fiction series. Caitlin, from your own point of view, I mean, there was one instance where if we look at it from a contemporary perspective, and I think it was interesting, you mentioned classic Doctor Who versus contemporary Doctor Who, etc., as a line from that. But the sense that when Maureen decides that, right, enough's enough, even though I actually haven't a clue what a space rocket was, I'm going to get dressed up, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to rescue my husband.
Thank you.
Yeah, it was very interesting, and maybe because of the sort of, from my perspective, the Doctor Who element that I could have picked up on, it felt very Doctor Who-esque to me, and I think that's probably a reason why I enjoyed it even more, because it sort of felt a certain way. But as Jess was saying, if I may, about characterization, it does feel as though if you have too many characters, you can't develop them and build them the way you want to. So then it's hard to sort of find that sort of relationship you want with those characters. So yes, I do agree with Jess on that it's hard to develop this sort of relationship you want to with the characters because there's just too many.
I mean, the ensemble cast is something which we wrestle with today, of course. Jenny, I'm surprised that you weren't wearing a silver suit in honour, obviously, of the Robinson family, because surely everybody, you know, in 1997 was wearing silver suits, and certainly by 2020, we must be wearing silver suits with cardboard packaging.
I've still got plenty of lame clothes. That's very similar. You were very kind when you said the science was weak, because I think a lot of the science was a bit rubbish. And they also, their timekeeping was, they said 3 minutes to launch or whatever it is that they said. And I think it must have been actually another 15 minutes before the thing actually took off. So it's a little bit like public transport minutes, you know, when there's a bus.
You have all of those telemetry controls, and they didn't realise until the ship had actually blasted off and was well into orbit. Oh, hang on, we've got an extra 200 pounds of weight we hadn't accounted for. Oh, there's a surprise.
I think you think they would have noticed there would be some kind of sensor that would tell them that there was some extra thing on board.
Yeah, just a thought. Eloise, when you bear in mind that I think it's Bob May who was, because there were two, there was obviously the voice of the robot, and I think it was the character who actually walked within the robot, he actually nearly shredded his knees to bits because actually inside the robot he actually had to cope with metal and various other things. Does that kind of enhance your appreciation of the agony to which the artists actually went through in producing this?
Yeah, it did. I mean, I was going to say that he was my favourite character anyway. I loved the robot. The fact that when the Doctor decided to mess with the switch, the robot was not waiting around for no human. He was just going to go and sort that himself. I thought that was wonderful. But Jesus, they could have at least given him knee pads.
Yeah, well, Owen Allen obviously likes to save on the budget, as we know, in terms of stock footage, but that's by the by. Robin, clearly a fan, clearly an unmitigated line from that point of view. Who is your favourite character? Is it Zachary Smith or is it Major Don West, played by the dashing Mark Goddard?
When I was a child, I actually wanted the robot to be my best friend. but looking back at it now, I like the way Jonathan Harris played Dr. Smith, because he was the first in a long line of villains that you love to hate. I mean, there's the logical sort of argument here that he was a saboteur, he was a trained killer, he programmed the robot to wipe out the Robinsons in upcoming episodes, and yet the Robinson family practically used him as a childminder. Well, you know, I get what Caitlin said, and quite rightly, about an ensemble cast. But what we've got to remember here is that the original pilot was just the family and Don West as a reserve pilot. So, you know, as the episodes went on, of course, Smith became one of the top characters, as did the robot. Audience feedback suggested that these late additions, who may not have hung around for that long, became a dominant force. And exactly the same thing happened at around the same time. The network wanted to get rid of Ilya Kuryakin from The Man from U.N.C.L.E., but they kept him. And of course, NBC wanted to get rid of Spock because he looked too satanic, and they kept him. And in those instances as well, the sort of sub-character became the cult favourite. So just happens.
Looking at the critic writing for the Daily Variety on September 17th, adults for whom the series is also aimed are apt to find the whole thing an unbelievable mishmash, and sci-fi buffs will just forget it as an insult to their intelligence. only character the story delved into at length was the heavy, and this leering, sneering heavy was right out of the drunkard, lacking only a neon sign saying, villain. This hot and cold running spy occupied most of the footage, with the robot a close second. If the viewer has courage, he'll tune in next week to see what happens. Jessica, listening a few weeks ago when we were featuring Angela Cartwright, who of course is Penny Robertson on the programme, now you'll be able to contextualise this. I mean, she went to Lost in Space, obviously having made her name with Birgitta in Sound and Music, and obviously situation comedy with Danny Thomas in the States. Does it warm the cockles of your heart? Do you think, actually, yes, this is good? I mean, you've already said you're likely to watch more episodes. You're going to be hooked by that cliffhanger.
Yeah, I thought it was just so heartwarming. And I think that, you know, having Angela and the boy who played Will, I think having like children on the ship helped keep it a bit more lighthearted. And it was kind of like when they were all floating around with no gravity, it was kind of like, oh, this is a bit of a fun thing. I think it kind of provided a bit of a silver lining in the otherwise, you know, whole dire life and death situation.
Music, of course, produced by John Williams, although, again, in the alternate version, we actually had the theme to The Day the Earth Stood Still was actually mentioned from there. And certainly, I say, the overall sort of line I felt was good. The robot was definitely my favourite character. From your own point of view, Jenny, who is your favourite character? Is it Zachary Smith?
definitely not. No, I like the mum. I think she was... Is she actually a little bit of a character for a woman? She wasn't just standing around in the background. She was quite feisty, and I quite liked her. Mm. Yeah.
Interesting, reviewing the sort of rewrites that were suggested by CBS, an unidentified executive of the network. Firstly, don't have Smith kill the guard. So actually, Robin, you said he killed somebody. We don't know he was actually... He might have just been knocked unconscious before being dumped into the trash can.
That's a fair point. He gave him a vicious karate chop to the back of the neck, chucked him out of the waste disposal, which was directly underneath the craft, which took off a couple of minutes later. So I think he was flash fried.
Secondly, he also was. They were also instructed to establish the robot, its function, and its importance before the entrance of Smith. Clarify Smith's mission and its purpose. He also quite curiously said something I do agree with, point D, there is too much sweetness and light on the part of the family, too many smiles, too much tenderness. There should be more toughness and humour between themselves. And the Judy and Don relationship should be built toward, not immediately laid on the line. Also, the clock should be kept alive so as to build up the time lock. So interesting lines from there in terms of what might have been. Caitlin, overall, what are your kind of considerations as we looked at that? Because, of course, and I think actually hopefully you'll join us again for next week, because next week we're going to the remake of Lost in Space, which I find infinitely superior as a piece of science fiction. I've nailed my colours to the mast already. But, Caitlin, what are your thoughts on this particular episode?
I found it very, very interesting. I've never seen the... classic version of Lost in Space before. I have seen a few episodes of the newer version, but watching this one, I probably enjoyed it more than the remake. I think I enjoyed the old one more than the remake. Because it's so simple, and it's like I said to you a couple of weeks ago about how I think some sci-fi dramas, they try to overdo it, whereas, you know, in classic eras of, say, Doctor Who or Lost in Space, it's just so simple, and it's brilliant. And I think I agree with what you say, Alex, about the family being sort of too sort of sweet. That I think there needs to be a bit more seriousness within it.
Look, honestly, Kate, it's like having breakfast with the Pierce family. I mean, I can't sort of attest to that, but I know from Eloise's line that, you know, they're just so wonderful. You've got your Stephen, you've got your Tiffany, you've got Maria and Robin, and it's honestly, you know, it's too much. It's too much.
Wow. I don't think we've ever been called sweet before. You know, a worse version of the Addams family, yes, but never sweet.
Moving on, Caitlin, I can tell that obviously Eloise will be saying that her legacy is in place, because not only can we see that you've got the Frozen poster in the background, though, you've obviously got the Jodie Whittaker Doctor Who poster. If only you'd actually put up a Paul McGann poster, then Eloise would have given you, been marking you 10 out of 10. I know that. But Eloise, currently, as I say, in the sort of Zoom anonymous sort of area, what, Eloise, are you going to go for in terms of a mark out of 10 for The Reluctant Stowaway, episode 1 of the first series of Lost in Space?
Well, I wasn't sure what I was getting into, not seeing it before, but knowing that my mum likes it, I went in with high hopes. And you can tell what they were trying to do with it. It was, I think it was really good for 1960s. There could have been changes, but there could be with everything. There's faults with everything. So I'm going to go for a
7.5. 7.5, basically. I think we had a little Zoom sort of distortion there in terms of 7.5. I'll take that as. Jenny?
I'm going to give it 8.
Oh, right. 8 for that, and 0 for Teen Titans Go. Frankly, Jenny, you're just all over the place. You know, it's like, it's honestly, you know, just don't know where we're going on this one. I mean, talk about a lack of an upbeat, inspirational song about life. Never mind. Jessica?
I think probably an 8.5. I really want to keep watching it. And it also gave me serious Zathura vibes, I think. Now I want to go watch Zathura, because the robot was like the exact same from it, kind of reminded me. So I think I'm really enjoying that.
Well, of course, the classic line that we really finish off Resident Rewind with is tune in same time next week, same channel, basically. And that's clearly a way forward. Caitlin, what are you going to score? I mean, we don't like doing a quantification of this, but it's a quantification of the qualitative. But you know, marks out of 10, what would you actually allocate to Lost in Space? An important, significant line, because, of course, this is your first official mark scoring on Resonance Rewind.
I would give Lost in Space, I'd give it a solid 8.
A solid 8. Excellent. Despite the fact that I've deliberately taken what many might say would have been a Robert Pierce approach to curmudgeonliness in terms of Lost in Space and in terms of the irritations I still have with the series, both first season, second season, and third season. Partly because, as I said at the start, we have to support our midweek drivettes, and I feel Angela Cartwright is now one of us, basically, to a certain extent. And the fact that it was certainly of its time and it has a certain amount of charm, I'm going to go 7.5. So that's the sort of line from that side of things. But Robin, presumably it's a straight 10 for you.
Well, first of all, did you just call me Robert? That was my father. It's Robin.
No, I did say Robin, actually. I was going to switch it to Rob, but I was just getting a telephone call from Graham Harper. So it goes.
Right. Actually, I'm not going to give it a 10. There are episodes in this that would definitely get a 10, and we might come on to those. I don't know. But as a series introduction, this gets a solid 8 from me. It takes us where we need to go. It's a completely sort of functional piece of TV. I think it was ahead of its time. What we need to remember is that the critics weren't very keen on the Man Trap episode of Star Trek either. So,
the Man Trap episode of Star Trek was rather like comparing whole works of Dostoevsky and Shakespeare with Janet and John books, if we're looking at actually comparing those kind of things. But we appreciate all manner of other bits and pieces.
Can I just make one point about the saccharine nature of the Robinson family? And there's an episode where Will can have anything that he wants from the wreckage of a spaceship that he's found, any wish that he wants. And, you know, he wishes for an apple. Okay, his father tells him off because he squandered the chance of getting a new navigation system for the, you know, take him all back to Earth for an apple. Now, my major grief with this was he's what, about 9 years old? You want an apple? Kid, couldn't you ask for a PS5 at the very least?
It was 1964 or even 1997. And I think even in 1997, the year in which the Jupiter 2 effectively launches, we didn't necessarily quite...
It could have been the future, though, because they might have travelled faster than light.
Yes, but you know, enough already. We can't actually support to any extent the sheer wonderment of. You see, clearly the robots are clearly having it in for me with respect to various other aspects. There, noises off, folks. But
is it AOPUS 14 Umbra calling you?
This is so true. I would say the pain, but that's a catchphrase that Smith doesn't actually use for a few episodes down the line. Next week, we remain lost in space as we actually move from the classic television series, of course, which we've looked at this week, at least the first episode there, and of course the dastardly Zachary Smith, played by Jonathan Harris, who, for my mind, actually was far better as Lucifer in the Glenn Larson Battlestar Galactica. But that's another point entirely. Next week, we're into the updated version, Lost in Space, which Caitlin's already seen one or two episodes of. We're looking again at the opening episode of that. That's to come. All we need to do now, after thanking Jessica Burtis, Caitlin Sinclair, Robin Pierce, Jenny Bill, and of course the wondrous Eloise Sheehan, is huge thanks. Keep on keeping on, and happy rewinding.
Thank you. Thank you.